Today's first reading is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 1 to 16, can be found on page 968 on the Pew Bibles. Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." The second reading is from Daniel. On page 883 in the Pew Bibles, Daniel 1:1-7. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. Young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
I wonder what might 2026 hold for you. This morning we'll think about that, and whether or not the year unfolds as you would have wanted, we'll receive some encouragement to see God's hand in it and be reminded whatever happens, it will be the place God is going to show his mercy to us and draw us closer to himself. We'll see that firstly, what we want for our lives in the future will have been influenced by a godless culture of which we are part, will have been influenced by family and friends, our social circle, our colleagues, fellow students, and the screens that we look at so much, which do not any of them acknowledge Jesus as Lord. Secondly, from Daniel's experience and what Jesus says in Matthew 5, we'll be reminded that our place of second best in God's hands can end up being a place of deep satisfaction. And that is because God chooses in that situation to grow us deeper in relationship with him. Firstly then, the influences that tell us what we need to achieve for happiness in 2026. So for my part, I was reminded of a headline in the satirical newspaper The Onion some years back, and the headline read, "Man's plan to straighten out entire life during week-long vacation yields mixed results." Returning to work after 7 days off, it read, "Derek Olsen, 31 years, confessed on Monday that his plan to use his week-long vacation to straighten out his entire life had yielded mixed results." This was supposed to be the week all the jobs I've been putting off for years, big and small, were going to get done, said Olsen. From getting Steve and Kim a gift for their wedding 2 months ago, to going through all those boxes I'd left unpacked since moving here in 98, to finally deciding what my future is. It was all going to get taken care of. I did pay my gas bill, Olsen continued, but then I lost the envelope somewhere on the way to the mailbox, so now I have to wait for a duplicate. After using last Saturday and Sunday, the first 2 days of his break, to recover from a tough week at work, Olsen decided he would begin to straighten up his life first thing on Monday morning. On Saturday night, well, I did write up a list of what I wanted to accomplish over the course of the coming week, he said, but it wasn't really that complete. And among the goals written on his abbreviated list, a thorough cleaning of his apartment, laundry, putting up some shelves, signing up for a course, cashing in a large jar of loose change, updating his CV, looking for a new job, and figuring out the whole relationships thing. I decided the first thing I was going to do was unpack all the stuff in the basement, Olsen said. When I opened the first box, marked magazines, it had nothing but a bunch of socks and my electric pencil sharpener. I got so annoyed with my lack of organisation, I went upstairs to watch TV. I actually would have achieved a lot on Friday. I went to pick up the computer desk Staples had been holding for me, but I forgot to bring my receipt. They wouldn't give me the stupid thing, even after an arguing with the guy for an hour. The whole day was a colossal waste, except that I got a new belt I needed for work. Speaking for myself, I hope I'm getting wiser with age, but I've got a week's holiday from tomorrow, and by disposition, I am inclined to think I can do a whole lot more with a week than I can in reality. Each new year, I find myself suffering from an unrealistic vision of what it's possible to achieve in the way of clearing the decks, finally getting on top of things, and so on. By some power, I'm going to be so much more efficient in 2026 in work life, family life. It will all be held in perfect balance. This year will be the year of no more firefighting, because I'll always be one step ahead and I'll plan my way out of every crisis. Well, before you laugh too much at my naivety, what are the ideas that shape your view of next year? What are your first choice situations you daydream about as being the answer to your personal happiness? Do you imagine to really be living, you need family relationships sorting out once and for all? Maybe in your imaginary world, conveniently, it doesn't involve you apologising for any offence you may have caused. The dream consists of that lot understanding you and realising you were right all along. Some of us are tempted to believe there is a perfect church out there somewhere just waiting for us. So finally, being part of that would mean we can really get serious with God and about our Christian discipleship. Others of us, it will be the desire for good health. Fitter or slimmer than we were in 2025 would be a bonus, and certainly not getting any older. Some of us would like to see our children or grandchildren ace their schoolwork and exams, and maybe there's some credit in there for us, if only people would notice it must have been the gene pool that led to the success of the grandkids. These things come in seasons, don't they, in our lives. So maybe there was a time we wanted an ideal home or a prestigious car. Back then, that's all your peers talked about. But today, either you've achieved it or you didn't. But in any case, the shine has gone off the idea. Now we're into cruises or something else. Maybe we just desire to be financially secure. If only we had the debts paid off, then we would be at peace and could get serious about Christian giving to the work of the church. Maybe we have older children we long to see married or who experience turbulent relationships themselves, and we'd be happy, we figure, if this year they could be happy. Well, if our emotions and our thinking have been captured by these ideas of fulfillment and success, a life of second best is going to be a hard sell, isn't it? In fact, some churches, seeing that, they incorporate the whole success thing into their teaching. You will have heard preaching along the lines of, God has a wonderful plan for your life, and that plan includes prosperity and health and wealth. Mischievously, a vicar I once worked with suggested we design a poster with a picture of Christians being thrown to the lions in the Colosseum in Rome, and underneath the image he said we'd have the words, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. Of course, God does love us more than we love ourselves. His work to save us shows that. And as we come to him and he involves us in reaching others, we are privileged and blessed. But that was also true of those Christians in Rome under Nero. And it was true of Daniel, who was thrown to lions in Babylon in Daniel chapter 6. And this morning, I would like to suggest that not getting our first choice lives can be the best thing for us. At the most basic level, you and I will know people who took first choice jobs and soon became bored by them. By contrast, we know people who took jobs in desperation, who then thrived in them and were fulfilled. You and I may know couples who were always meant to be together, who had everything going for them, who are no longer together. You and I may know married couples who came together, maybe in chaotic circumstances, but since came to thrive. Speaking to any crop of students, there will be those who went to university sobbing, taking up their second choice courses, but now would not change where they are or what they are doing for anything. And then there are those who got their first choice but came to question whether it was a good thing. And most important of all, let's be encouraged, it is in second choice worlds very often we find Jesus ministering to us. And in second choice worlds we find our calling to minister to other people. The light that is in us, Matthew 5:14, shining before them, glorifying God. When the Babylonian army invaded Jerusalem, Daniel, who was a Jew, part of God's covenant people, was dragged off by the enemy to Babylon. He was from Jerusalem's little capital, Judah. King Nebuchadnezzar's troops took that land, they killed 1,000, and ordered that some of the Israelites were brought back to Babylon to serve in Nebuchadnezzar's palace. Daniel himself was from a gifted bunch of people, young men, it says, without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed and quick to understand. From his natural gifts, Daniel's life seemed set for a life of first choice. Suddenly, though, he was thrown into a life he would not have chosen. In their homeland, boys with Daniel's qualities would serve as priests in the temple or as wise men. They would have learned the Old Testament law, they'd have learned about God, maybe going into government service in the court in Jerusalem or the temple. Now, with his friends, Daniel is serving a pagan enemy state that destroyed his country. In verses 4 to 7, we see four ways they have to live they never would have chosen for themselves. And firstly, is an education in the Babylonian language and literature. So they were clever lads. They ended up thriving on Babylonian education, but it was full of the occult. Its spirituality would have made them sick to the stomach. And secondly, those diets, their Jewish upbringing would have led them to believe everything given to them was unclean and it was prepared in an unclean situation. Eating the same food as the king sounds great, doesn't it? But accepting that food would imply an association with, a dependence on, a pagan king. Thirdly, they were expected to work for the government of a nation that had destroyed their own country. Lastly, they would have the names, their names were changed to reflect the occult background of Babylon. Now you might wonder, did Daniel and his friends have any choices at all? Well, if death is a choice, they did. They could have said no to all those things. They could have refused to cooperate at every turn, but then almost certainly have been killed. Another option was to accept all the demands on them. They could have said, yes, we'll learn it all, we'll accept it all, we'll eat it all, we'll believe it all. Now, if you know the story, you'll remember that supporting one another, Daniel and his friends go along with the Babylonian education, they go along with the careers in Babylon, they even accept their names being changed, now reflecting Babylonian gods. But then chapter 1, verse 8, they decide they are unwilling to defile themselves with some of the royal food and wine. What we read is, as a group, Daniel and his friends resisted what was for them a step too far. And importantly, they knew their doctrine, they knew what they believed about God, enough to be able to make a decision on what they were willing to compromise on, and enough to know what they would not compromise on. Importantly, Daniel and his friends studied their new situation enough to know what they would not accept. They didn't just study their Bible, they studied where they were, the culture of the place, and they made their critique, and so they knew what each compromise represented. So far, so good. Saying no to the king's food worked out. They stay alive, they stay healthy, and grow in wisdom. But by chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar is having dreams. And there are death threats for magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers if his dreams are not described and interpreted. The threats are also aimed at Daniel's group. So Daniel himself is riding another tiger, having to cope with a leader who's angry and confused. That too is a situation we may experience in our own lives. Someone over us could be a boss at work, a family member who's not thinking straight, but can make things uncomfortable for us. Then Daniel chapter 2, verse 17 and 18, returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. It is when Daniel prays to his Creator God, big changes take place. And this is for us to note. Praying with others makes the way for godly wisdom. It shows God we are ready to be part of what he'll do next. What God answers might not line up with our first choice, but prayer will always bring perspective on what's going on in situations we can't control. We need people who are committed to talking with God, with us, and for us. That's what our prayer meetings are all about. It's what home groups too are there to provide. Daniel was a very capable person. He was a visionary, he was intelligent, he was a skilled politician and a negotiator, but he needed to pray. And then in chapter 2, following the prayer, a quantum leap. There are events in yours and mine, second choice worlds, after they have happened. Well, we've come to see them as pivotal. They might be conversations we had, could be decisions we made, initiatives we started that changed everything, though we didn't know that at the time. After Daniel and his friends prayed during the night, the mystery of Nebuchadnezzar, his dream, was shown to Daniel in a vision. He praises God and goes to Arioch, the person that the king had told to kill the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel says to him, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king and I will interpret his dream for him." And Daniel gets an audience with the king, who asks, chapter 2, verse 26, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" It's a sea change moment for Daniel. One way or another, his life will never be the same again. And Babylon will never be the same again. We've got a story which began with Nebuchadnezzar deciding the future of Daniel and his friends. Now Daniel is the one telling the king of Babylon what his future is. In our second choice worlds, why do we fear death, or the opinion of others, or growing old, or being seen as a failure? Our Matthew passage 2 teaches there will be times we both speak and act in truth so we can be a light in places we might not want to be at all. Well, by chapter 3, Babylon is still not Daniel's choice. His detractors can still make his life difficult. Some Babylonian astrologers come forward to denounce the Jews, saying to King Nebuchadnezzar, why not make everyone fall down and worship an image of gold that you set up? The enemies of the Jews tell the king that Daniel and his friends are paying no attention to this statue. There are many opportunities in our own lives where we also are expected to bow down to our culture's values that cut across God's best for us. And we know to go against the culture will be to be either labelled stupid or bigoted or on the wrong side of history, at the very least to be missing out on something. In our workplaces, we may be sidelined, silenced, or humiliated. Well, Daniel and his friends stood up in their experience of intimidation and say, chapter 3, verse 17, if we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. And as it happened, that decision did open the door for more of God's grace. Daniel and his friends were miraculously spared. The fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Daniel and his friends trusted that the majority doesn't rule, but that God does. They could only have found the courage to do that. We can only find the courage to do that in our lives if we are ruled by another kingdom which is over and above our culture as it piles on the pressure to live by its values. Babylon was not their home, and this present age is not yours and mine. As followers of Jesus, we belong to the kingdom that, even though we can't see it yet, can and should shape how we live in our troubled locations. By contrast, if we focus our attention on what we need or want right now, this world will hold power over us. If our only question is, what will I get out of this? It will lead to a life that only sometimes refers back to God and his kingdom. If we're gripped by self-protection, security, or success, we won't see that God leads us into second choices, for both for our sakes and for other people. It's in Second Choice World, Matthew 5, in the poverty of spirit, in mourning, in persecution, amid insults and lies, against that our equilibrium will come from remembering the prophets, the Messiah that went before us and were afflicted. And so, to finish, the messages of Daniel and the Beatitudes are not messages of gloom. They show us not getting to choose, but instead living for him is what brings meaning and purpose in our lives. Second choice, very often, is the place of mission where God shows his love and grace and deliverance. In 2026, wherever you find yourself, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Amen.